You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 2 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Patrick O'Dowd, you hate wrestling, and that's how we're going to start the show. Like, why do you hate wrestling? Why? I feel like we've had this conversation before too. Why do you hate wrestling so much, Patrick O'Dowd? This business that's given you so much.
I don't hate wrestling. I hate the big two right now.
Okay,
if
fair.
That makes sense.
Let's talk about it. Let's trick Williams. You get there. Hopefully, people on the listening get the let's trick Williams, because he always says let's talk about it.
So
it's his version of Cody Rhodes.
Do you recall the professional wrestling company I am currently watching regularly over all others right now?
Unless it has changed, my assumption would be TNA.
No.
New Japan.
Lower than TNA. Lower than New Japan. On it is on.
Oh, is it WoW?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I watch, that's some shit. So I get it.
You know why I watch WoW?
WoW is like 1989 WWF.
But that's not why I watch WoW.
Why do you watch like, WoW? Because I can foster a guess before you say anything?
Sure.
Here's what I'm going to guess as to why you watch WoW. Because you don't have to think.
It's not even that I don't have to think. I know that whatever I see on that screen, I'm not going to have shouted at me on another screen when I jump on any of my medias. And I think I hit my peak burnout point. And this is what's funny. It's our own people, Greg.
Of course it is.
You know, we bitch. We on this show, we bitch about the Meltzers. We bitch about the Alvarezes. We bitch about the SRS. We bitch about what these guys say. And it wasn't until the fatigue that I felt over the reaction of Dijak not getting his contract picked up and to have the noise, and not just with our folks, but the noise around why this dude was like some monumental I forgot he was on the fucking company. I forgot he was in the fucking company. And he's like, you know, and he's writing this manifesto that he, you know, he's not coming back and how hard he worked and he grinded, blah, blah, blah. And he's going to show everybody. And then you're like, he's 39? And
36 maybe, but yeah.
30s, yeah. However, he's in his mid-30s. He's pushing 40 at this point. So he gives this statement. And then, like, our people are talking about how the WWE just fucked it all up. And then all these other wrestling personalities are talking about how the WWE fucked it all up and how he's going to go to AEW. And everybody even rationally is saying he's going to go to AEW and be important for like three shows and then go away and blah, blah, blah. Something about, and he's just, and then I think you said he's going to be an agent someday. Like that's his future.
That was my joke. Yeah.
Yes. And it was like the last straw in what has just been a litany of straws stacking on top of each other. It's even like I stopped listening to like wrestling podcasts, I'm still subscribed to the ones, you know, that I subscribe and listen to.
Right.
I've skipped them. I get mad at them. I get annoyed with them. I get like every time Eric Bischoff starts talking about how AEW doesn't have stories, I'm like, even I am like, no, they have stories. You just don't like the stories. You think they're bad stories. It doesn't mean they don't have stories. And seeing that in the internet narrative, you know, people just going to war over everything. Like right now, the current hotness is talking about how the WWE somehow wronged Mercedes Moné because they didn't want her to go do The Mandalorian because she was an important property to them and they wanted to use her that way. Oh my God, that's so unusual. Why would any company dream of doing that? That's so sad. Plus,
that's also the old regime.
I'm not done ranting yet.
I'm sorry. Wave fist at Cloud.
Let's consider the goddamn source and how reliable that human being is on all the shit they talk about.
Facts.
Like, I'm sorry. I bet you it's somewhere in the fucking middle. And yet that's the soup du jour. And what it does is it, like, I can't stare at those properties right now without being mad at them because of the noise that surrounds them. And it's not even the show's fault. Like, it is the show's fault that I'm sitting there and I am mad that I will see on the internet every time that Chad Gable shows up on TV, well, he was fucking murdered. No, he wasn't murdered. You can get hit in the temple and bleed and not die.
Like, which he even talked about. Yeah, it's not a bullet hole. And it's the murder thing is that's a whole topic. But
sorry,
because I think people wanted him to be murdered. But here's my problem. Okay, I'm just gonna go off on the side because this bothered me when I watched Raw from last night as well. As we record this program on Tuesday, July the 2nd, in the year 2024, in the year of our Alanis Morissette, 2024. Because it, when, and I know you watched it.
She's touring, when, by the way.
Is she really? Good for her.
Yeah,
good for her. State fairs need performances. I don't know what she's doing.
Wow, she actually has a legit tour, dude. Like,
the only reason I say that is because they announced who's performing this year at the Arizona State Fair.
Is Alanis Morissette?
No, I don't remember. I just remember the 90s one is Vanilla Ice, Rob Bass, and Montel Jordan. I don't remember the other two. One is rock, and I can't remember what the other one is. But
I took you off topic.
No, you're fine. So this week when Nikki Cross, Sister Abigail, Abby, whatever she's going to end up being called, delivers the package to Michael Cole, there were two dudes lying on the announce table playing dead. When the Wyatt Six made their debut 2 weeks ago on Raw, there was a litany of people backstage playing dead. Why don't we give a fuck about that? As a company, like, why has that not been brought up? Yes, we talked about Chad Gable and he's okay, but it took days for we got an update on Ricochet quicker than we got an update on Chad Gable, and Ricochet ain't even gonna be working there anymore. He's already gone. Like, why do we like? And then Michael Cole and Corey Graves are just cool. Like, they're just commenting the rest of the night. They obviously saw what happened. Were these people dragged out across the floor and dumped on the announce table? Were they beat up right there and thrown on the announce table? Was it the same guy I saw later sitting next to Michael Cole with a bald head and a goatee? Because it might have been, because one of the guys on the table was bald. I don't know. But that's the thing for me. It's like, they're saying it's not going to be supernatural. They're going to try to play it real. And I think they're getting to that point, because I actually really enjoy the segments where Uncle Howdy is interviewing Bo Dallas. But it's like, what are we, like, that aspect of it is what bothers me, because it's a bad story, just that piece though. I love the rest of it.
But what's really interesting and this really comes down to the core is part of why that bothers you is because you're in your late 40s and you're more mature as a viewer. You live in the industry as a promoter, so you look for what needs to be narratively sensical within the structure of what you're telling, and it doesn't really make a lot of sense, especially given the rest of the way the company has worked in the past.
That's the key right there. I'll get back to that, but that's the key.
And the thing for me, and why, like, honestly, I didn't blink as a fan for that, because it's about, to me, just, it was about the mood and what it was trying to, what they were trying to create. And I forgave it because I just took it for what it was and didn't need to. I didn't pick that apart, which is really funny coming from me. If you've ever listened to Bandwagon Nerds, like when I watch wrestling, I don't want to be, as we call him on Bandwagon Nerds, I don't want to be Retainer Boy, where I'm going after logical fallacies and narrative problems, like the way I do when I talk about the Acolyte on Disney Plus right now. Like I don't want to be that guy when I watch pro wrestling, which brings it back to WoW. I can watch WoW, enjoy it thoroughly, and not worry a damn thing about what happened. Because you know what doesn't show up on the internet, Greg? Internet reports of the goings-ons at WoW. Like yep. The Tonga Twins left the company and they were going to speak their piece. And we saw one tweet and then I stopped looking. And nobody talked about it because nobody cares.
It's that, yeah, hey, look, nobody cares meme. And that's true. And you can enjoy it. And then I smile because I know some of those people, but it's,
you might, and that's great.
I do. I know one.
We interviewed one of them.
Did we? Is the one I think like old school.
Which one are you thinking?
What's Jesse, whatever her name is.
Oh no, she, yeah, there's her, but, Barbie Hayden.
Oh, Barbie Hayden. Champ. Yeah. I forgot. Yeah. She's their champion. Abilene, yeah.
Maverick. She just lost. She dropped the belt couple weeks ago. She's no longer the champion.
I thought I saw a post about, yeah, I think she's gone from the company too. I think they, yep, went through some MLW style turnover in recent months. But what you mentioned, something that, and that it's what gets me, that goes against everything else they're doing. Like they've been moving in this more realistic direction. And then this, and all I need is an explanation. All I need is commentary to be like, they're receiving care, they're going to be okay. And I'm good. Like, that's all I need. All I needed was some follow-up on the initial attack. That's like, we're receiving care. Chad Gable's under care. We're rebuilding the gorilla area. It's going to be fine. That's it. That's all I needed. Because then it fits within the rest of the show. And you, right, hear me all the time talk about this. You know, especially its criticism of AEW and of many independent promotions. They don't know what they are. And I feel like WWE knows what they are. So when they do this one thing that's completely outside of what they are, it doesn't fit. If this was Lucha Underground, I wouldn't give a crap about lion bodies all over the place. Because it fits. It fits with what they do. I'd kind of be okay with it in TNA because they've done some of that supernatural, we kill off character stuff. They haven't done it recently that I remember. But they do some of that. So to me, that's a bigger part of the problem because I see that and I'm like, it just doesn't fit with everything else. But that's it. But what's interesting is that, and you said it best, right? It's not the company's fault. Your biggest problem with the two biggest companies is the fan base. It's and that's been the biggest problem. And here's the thing. The relationship between AEW and WWE and their fans, it's fucking politics. It, right, really is. And AEW was announced, what, the beginning of 2019, I believe? Like, literally 3 years after the election that tore this country apart. Like, the election, because we used to have Democrats and Republicans fight during elections. And when it was over, by the time the inauguration happened, most people were cool. But when Trump did his election, and he was so outlandish, and it allowed other people to be so outlandish, that inauguration came and went. People still weren't cool and haven't been cool since. I saw a meme the other day, and you could apply this to wrestling too. People were like, you guys are legitimately losing friendships over two dudes who don't know your name and don't give a fuck that you exist. And it's the, right, same thing with wrestling. Like, wrestling cares that you exist more than these dudes do because you're buying a ticket. And, well, you're also voting, so they care. But it's like, people literally hate each other over wrestling, just like they hate each other over politics. And I don't think either things are supposed to be that way. Politics, right, is at fault because we created a shitty system. Wrestling is an entertainment product. Like, it's literally here for us to enjoy. And people, and it happens in sports. It happens in so much. But wrestling is the realm that we live within. And it is so stupid to me that it gets like that. And what you're saying is just completely emblematic of that fact. Like, it's fucked, and it's fucked because of what you've experienced and the way that the fans are. And that sucks, but, like, I don't know. I say I don't know what's going to change it, but I see some of the fans. I feel like I see more fans saying that it's stupid to be that way. And it has been five years.
There is. I think, you know, it's really interesting when you look at this notion of quote-unquote tribalism and where that really came to be born, like this idea where it really came to be born, because there's always been a brand loyalty when we've had a big two. You know, you had your NWA, like as the territories dissolved, and you basically had the NWA / WCW, and then you had the WWF. Like, there were ardent supporters, but they didn't have an internet to yell at each other over. And they didn't really vilify the other for what they liked. You know, like they might be like, well, I like real wrestling or whatever, because, you know, in the WWF, you know, it's all cartoony and none of those people are real wrestlers. But, you know, you go and you got Arn and you got Tully and you got Flair and these guys. Never mind that Sting was a big fucking cartoon character and, you know, whatever. Vader was kind of a big fucking cartoon character. He's a big cartoon villain. He was a boss in a Mario Brothers game. Like, that's what he was.
Yeah.
But anyway, because different but same.
Right.
And so, I even remember when I was in high school, I worked in the summers. I worked as part of the summer cleaning crew with the custodial staff. Like, or I would be, you know, we would get paired up with another janitor to clean classrooms. And the guy I was paired up with, he and I used to go back and forth over what was good wrestling, because he was an NWA, WCW guy, and I was a WWF guy. And that those conversations were fine. Like, we argued, but we didn't get mad at each other. And now you could go on the internet right now and be like, AEW's mats are black, and all of the WWE fans would be like, I don't know, they'd find a way to shit on it because the mat isn't blue. And it's weird. It's weird, and it's no fun. And, like, I can't even find just straight up results anymore for something. Like, I, honest to God, randomly just wanted to see who won and who lost at Forbidden Door.
Right.
And everything I found, like, I just wanted a straight up results sheet. Like, not a commentary on the match, not somebody's thoughts on the match. Just wanted to know who won and lost. Maybe if somebody surprised and appeared, like I hear Britt Baker's back. Yay! Good for Britt. You know, knock some teeth out and then put them back in via your practice. Do what you got to do. But I couldn't even find that without somebody decreeing how amazeballs Forbidden Door was. Like, and from what I understand, it was a fine AEW pay-per-view, but it was by no means some bar-setting pay-per-view.
The reactions that I've seen are not, like, because everybody does star ratings now, right? And right. Not a lot of things were in the threes and fours. Upper
well,
threes,
we,
lower
we've
fours.
We've talked about this too, right? Where we've watched somebody review a show, give right. all the matches threes and fours, then rate the show a 9.5. And it's like, but,
right. Like, what the hell are you doing? Yeah, exactly. Right. It doesn't make any sense.
Anyway.
But it's all stupid. And it sucks too, because there are things to like about it. Someone posted the other day, and I'm in this group of, like, very, very old school fans, that somehow I got added to. And the person was like, why do I hate pro wrestling so much? That was a question he posed. And people were giving answers, and I was just like, dude, because the business – and he's a very old school fan, loves like old NWA, old whatever. And I'm like, because it's changed and it's not what you grew up on. It's not what you fell in love with. It's essentially a completely different thing. I was like, and that's okay. Things evolve, and I don't know that we're even meant to love the same stuff forever sometimes. Like, go find something – and people hate when I say that. Go find something new. They're like, fuck you. Go find something new. No. Change what's out there now so that I can like it. I'm like, it's wildly – and then people are – and then someone else says, well, they've ruined my pro wrestling. And I'm like, it's wildly successful, more successful than ever before. They didn't ruin anything. They just changed what you liked. And people say that about football, right? The NFL is now too, you know, they call too many penalties on things. Basketball, like, it's not as tough as it used to be. Like, people, you know, they made too many changes to baseball and they've ruined my sport that I grew up on, love so much. Things evolve and things change. And if you can't get over that, then you got to move on to something else. So that's really hard for people to swallow, especially when they love something as a kid. I think it was easier when, like, you just kind of fell out of wrestling because you were growing up, going to college, people who didn't watch it, and you found other things. You didn't make a conscious effort to stop watching wrestling. It just sort of happened.
Right.
And then you met this idiot in me who had to suck you back in. But for some of these people, they hate it so much, but not enough to make that conscious effort, that conscious decision, that it's truly not for them anymore. And right. And they got to move on to something else.
And that's – it's so – funny to me, because it's not like there aren't things that you can find that might scratch that itch. Like,
of course,
right now New Japan is in, to put it nicely, such a transition period right now with their talent. Like you just don't, the star power isn't there yet. Like there's guys with potential, and there's guys you can watch and be like, this looks like this could be somebody big. This looks like something, this could be,
which I don't remember the name of the guy, but whoever the guy was that won the New Japan Cup, he looked like to me that he could be somebody big. Then he lost his title match, and I don't even know what he's doing now. And instead, John Moxley won the title and then lost it back to Naito at Forbidden Door, and right. Which so, a match that everybody so hated,
is,
apparently.
There is some of that, you know, same problem that we run into at other companies, especially the bigger companies, because and this has always been true. Part of why it's so hard. You know, because you hear this all the time. People should build new stars, or you know, the X, Y, and Z company should build new stars, and they claim that that's happening in AEW, but it's really not. They claim that it's, you know, that the WWE doesn't do it, and they kind of aren't. And here's why, because you go, like, this has been true since the territory days. You go with who you trust and know is going to get you
absolutely
where you want to go. And so right now, the WWE is working its ass off to build us a Solo Sikoa stardom, like, turn.
Right.
Like, as you know, right now he's, you know, he had his big moment where we decimated Paul Heyman on SmackDown. I watched it. I watched SmackDown this week. I watched Raw this week. And people seem kind of like they're you hear it in the crowd. What is the crowd chanting when Solo Sikoa is in the middle of the ring?
Oh, they're chanting, "We want Roman."
Now, that's not an absolute rejection of Solo. Part of that is just the story that's being told. And, you know, I'm sure you have speculation on where that story is going. But
of course I do.
But. Like, just watching it at face value, sometimes we're so reactionary in the back that we might be like, oh, God, they hate this dude. I don't think that's the case. I think they know what they have in Solo Sikoa. I think they know what they have in this, you know, new bloodline that they've got going on and where they're going with the story. But if you were to read the interwebs, it's like, well, they're not – they're here's the WWE, like, shoving this guy down our throat, like that famous line, like – right, like, he was big, and now we'll turn on him. We loved Cody until we didn't. Meanwhile, over at AEW, like, I don't know who is an up-and-coming guy that they're trying to build and impress me with. Like, Swerve?
Swerve, and Swerve definitely, and that's the thing.
And
like,
I have to listen, and I have to listen to how Swerve was misused over and over and over again.
That's part of the problem. They are building new stars, like they are building Swerve up as a new star, but everybody focuses on how they're misused by WWE. Hangman Page was one they built up as a big star, but that was so long ago now that it doesn't matter. Will Ospreay is one that they've positioned very well as a big star. He came in, he won the international title. He was the contender. I don't like they had to win a gauntlet to be able to challenge Swerve when he was the international champion. Like, it should have given him some cachet to challenge him. But he put over Swerve, and I'm glad he did. And you know, let's be honest. Like, they brought Okada to a much bigger audience than has seen him before. They're not really creating a bigger star. Jack Perry just won the TNT title. I don't like Jack Perry. I don't think he's going to be a big star. But they are creating a new star out of Jack Perry. The Acclaimed, like, they've done it with people before. The problem is far too many of them are quote-unquote wasted by WWE, and so that's what we focus on. And even if it's not, then it becomes this person would have been wasted had they gone to WWE. Like,
right.
They just can't get WWE, and I say they, I mean the fans. They just can't get WWE out of their brain, and I think that hurts
the AEW. It's so stuck in their head. And the flip flop it, WWE fans are no better.
Because
they're no better. What?
The hardcore WWE fans are no better. But that's such a smaller percentage of the audience.
There's a love out. Okay, so this noise, the big difference is that basically we kind of view AEW stands and their standgasm. We look at them as I going crazy, and that they're all hardcore fans. Like, that
right.
This whole group is hardcore.
The core fans. AEW audience is the hardcore fan. The core WWE right. audience is the families who buy their tickets and go to the show, the casuals. Yeah. We just don't hear from them on social media because
right.
they're casuals.
Yeah, and they don't lose their shit over every perceived big moment on a program. Or new arrival on a program. Like
it's just the casuals. When Jacob Fatu showed up, the casuals did not know who he was.
No, they just knew that that's a scary looking dude.
Exactly. And he got over with them because he liked them. Because they liked him. Most of them didn't know who Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa were. They did not know. They know now. And we'll talk about an actual thing. And you talked about how I probably have predictions about what's going to happen. And of course, Roman's going to come back, especially after they assaulted Paul Heyman. Here's my fear, and this came up today. Someone shared it, and they were like, "The Nexus was a huge fail by WWE," and it had a picture of eight guys. And I'm like, "Okay, here's eight guys that are in the Nexus. They were all new stars to WWE at the time." Wade Barrett is still a fixture on WWE television. Daniel Bryan Danielson had a Hall of Fame career and is now basically the number two guy behind the scenes in AEW. Even if we stop right there and we don't talk about what Heath Slater was able to accomplish or the fact that Ryback is still infamously famous at this point, even if we just stop at those two, that's 25% of a stable of new people are probably going into the Hall of Fame. Wade Barrett will probably go in just because of his commentary and everything else. To me, I feel like that's a pretty good hit rate. They can't all be the Shield, where everybody becomes a major star. The Shield is the anomaly, and that's why it might go down as the greatest.
The Shield was three dudes, not
exactly.
Eight.
If the Shield was eight, it probably would have been the same three dudes that made
three
it.
Dudes
it. It would have been the three dudes that made
the ones
it.
Who got over. Like,
but here's my fear. I look at the new bloodline, and I'm like, how long are these guys' contracts? Because when this storyline is over,
what do you do with them?
Jacob Fatu, I think, has a future. And here's the unpopular thing. I'm not really feeling Solo in the role he's in. Like, I don't think he's ready to be the lead of anything. I don't think he is the lead. I think he's really just The Rock's errand boy and all this, and that'll come out in the long run. I think The Rock called the hit on Heyman, not Solo. Maybe even Solo turns and joins back up with Roman, and you get the OG bloodline versus all this new stuff, because we still got the other Tongan's still ready to come in. The Rock will come back at some point. Roman will come back and reform with the Usos. Like, it's all going to work. And then I look at Jey Uso. Like, Jey Uso's gone on to Raw. He's completely separate from the bloodline storyline, and Jey Uso's a big star now, a huge star. Should probably win Money in the Bank, even though people don't want to see him do it. I think Jey Uso should win Money in the Bank. I'll give you my prediction at the end of the program, just because. But I didn't even think about doing predictions until now.
I think the problem with Jey is how many bites at the apple is he going to get right now?
Right.
Like that, like, this. Here's the thing is, I understand.
How many bites at the apple has Drew McIntyre gotten?
True. But even then, Clash of the Castle and Clash of the Castle, like they just keep, every time they go to Scotland, that's when he gets a shot.
Well, the first one was in Wales.
Right? Hey, we're going to your home country. Congratulations.
Well, the first one was in Wales, but they still considered it his hometown thing.
Fair enough. But anyway, back to my point here. It feels like, and I know I'm so conflicted because I agree with you on where Jey is, but I also feel like he's failed so often so recently that it might be okay for him to not for a little bit.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and I don't want him to factor into, like, I don't want his story to be that some sort of wild victim of circumstance prevented him from getting the briefcase. Like, I would love it to be more along the lines of he's one of those people that's on the outside of the ring when, you know, LA Knight finally climbs triumphantly and grabs the briefcase.
Well, it's interesting because Chad Gable being in the match, I feel like the Wyatt Six is going to take Chad Gable and Jey Uso out of the match because Gable was kind of putting the shade on to Jey Uso. He left his family. He did this. He stole the Fireflies. Like, I do think that, and even in the thing, Bo Dallas talked about abandoning family, and that's what Jey Uso did. So I can see them going after Jey Uso as well and maybe taking both those guys out of the match. You want to know what I think? I'll go right now. You want to know what I think is going to happen in the men's Money in the Bank? I think Drew McIntyre is going to win the briefcase. And I don't think CM Punk's going to screw him over at all. And then Drew McIntyre's going to try to cash in during the Seth Rollins versus Damian Priest match. And that's where CM Punk's going to fuck him over. Because Drew McIntyre said on Raw, I'm going to win the briefcase and I'm going to cash in Toronto. Like, he basically said he's doing the cash in that night. And McIntyre's desperate because he keeps on losing his stuff and he thinks that he took CM Punk out. And I think Punk's going to screw him over again, which will lead to their match at SummerSlam and everything else. Plus, my biggest complaint with WWE booking, and we'll see what happens at Money in the Bank, everything is becoming too obvious with WWE booking right now. It's chalk.
You've been pounding that drum for...
It's just too... Like, nothing's a surprise. Now, there are some things that are surprised, so I need to take that away. Like, NXT has more surprises than WWE has right now. But I think that's... Triple H would say, we're just trying to be logical in our booking. And, okay... But it's pro wrestling still. Like, it's still... And Triple H even said himself, and I love the quote, we're not pro wrestling. We're a TV show about pro wrestling. We're a movie about pro wrestling. So go and be a movie about pro wrestling. Like, that has dramas and twists and turns that you don't always see coming. And that's a big part of it. But I just feel like it's been too obvious. Like, people have been able to more accurately predict the outcomes of these matches than ever before, at least based on my informal research on social media. And to me, that's not necessarily a good thing. And so that's why I'm complaining about it. You know my other complaint?
What's your other complaint?
I've been pounding the table for it, too. They are not doing right by the women right now. Like, women have not main evented WrestleMania since Vince McMahon was in charge. WrestleMania 37 was the last time women main evented WrestleMania. And you got two nights each round to do it. Like, come on, people. And not only that, but like, even in NXT, and NXT does much better job with the women than... Now, I know Rhea Ripley just main evented Elimination Chamber, but if that show wasn't in Australia, she's not main eventing that card against Nia Jax. NXT has Heatwave this weekend. If Roxanne Perez and Lola Vice aren't in the main event, and instead it's a random four-way match for your title, like, that's... It should have been Roxanne Perez and Jordan Grace at Battleground in Vegas. Like, why are we afraid to put women in this position all of a sudden in WWE? They have the talent. You're just not doing it. And it feels like it used to feel... When we eventually needed the women's evolution.
Yeah.
That's how it's starting to feel again.
It's this. I mean, again, this is something you've been preaching for weeks and upon weeks now. It's been driving you crazy. And even
it has.
Like, let's take Liv Morgan for an example right now. She's partially because she can't feud directly with Rhea Ripley because Rhea's, you know, recovering and right. on her honeymoon and all that fun stuff. Congratulations, by the way, to a buddy. Good job, man. Liv's big story is fucking with Dominic and the Judgment Day. Like, that's
mm-hmm.
that's
she's really, the linchpin of that whole story right now.
That's not a story for her though, really, until Rhea Ripley comes back. When Rhea Ripley comes back as the babyface who's on the outs with the Judgment Day because Rhea's wormed her way in and taken it over. But, you know, that's just...
Yeah, well, Liv's job right now is to make sure that Rhea Ripley is one of the biggest babyfaces around when she comes back. Just like Solo's job right now is to turn Roman Reigns babyface when he comes back.
Which he has done.
Roman did it too, like... Everyone appreciating Roman so much when he dropped the title just made it easier for them to turn him and everything.
Right.
And all. And that's another issue. But here, we're going to go to commercial real quick. We're going to play a commercial. We're going to come back. But before I do, I don't even normally harp on this stuff anymore, but we can this time because you can go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. You can pick up your very own chair shot t-shirt. There is a sale that runs for 48 hours from July 3rd. 1 p.m. Eastern time to July 5th, 1 p.m. Eastern time. You can save 20% on your entire order using the promo code America24 at prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Now, if you happen to spend over $150, you also get free shipping. So there you go. But prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot, promo code America24. You will save 20% on your order. So go get you something. You're pointing, Patrick O'Dowd. What are you pointing at?
Well, see, now this is why you are the tribal chief of thechairshot.com. Because when I talk about promo codes for pro wrestling tees, I don't bother to look up and tell anybody what it is. I'm just like, I'm sure there's a promo code that you could all put in.
I was prepared today. I also get the emails since I set up the store. But that definitely does help. So there you go. prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot or any pro wrestling tees item, of course. America24, save 20%. We'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12-powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 2 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
By the way, the promo code America24 will save you 20% at prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Promo code CHAIRSHOT probably won't do shit for you at Angry Lemonade. We just need to change the commercial. So,
I stopped using that one.
You should. I have a new one I need to make. I just need to get with Tunney and
quite some time ago.
I need to get with Tunney and make the new one. I have a new one that we can make. We just have
Tunney's just happy we're recording a program today.
Tunney is thrilled. Tunney's doing great right now.
He messaged me earlier this evening to confirm whether or not we're recording. I was like, as far as I know, we are. And then he was inviting me to be on DWI. And I had to be like, but I hate wrestling right now, man. Like, I don't know. I don't. Like, part of it, and I know you got other things you want to talk about. Part of the reason why I now just immediately when either Dave or Tony or somebody else, mm-hmm. like, you don't listen to Bandwagoners all the way through. I know this a lot. But I have now started giving a counter. Like, I read the timestamp when Dave makes a wrestling reference during my pop culture podcast. And I'd be like, all right, congratulations, Dave. It only took you 7 minutes to weasel in an AEW reference.
Because they just can't do it. They just can't. Themselves. It's that big a part of their lives.
I'm guilty of it, too.
Right.
Because we've all been there. But not every show.
Of course. Yeah. I could do. I was talking when I was on Mindless Wrestling Podcast today in their 200th episode. Congratulations to all parties. I gave my spiel that I always give. No one cares about your podcast about wrestling. No one cares that Patrick and I talk about wrestling. They care that Patrick and I talk. And that's why they listen. Because there is a million and one podcasts about wrestling that they can listen to.
Absolutely.
If you're listening to this show, you want to hear us talk about it. And that's the thing about podcasts. And I encourage, if you're a podcast about wrestling, anywhere in the world right now, if you are a podcast about wrestling, I both challenge and encourage you, do an episode about anything but wrestling. Just do it. Because if you can't do that episode about anything but wrestling, then you're not a good podcaster. And you and your team are not a good team, because it's all about the people. It's all about the personalities. And has nothing to do with the topic whatsoever. That's just me. But hey, what do I know? I've only started this website. We've only been doing this for 13 years. And I promote successful, profitable wrestling events.
Acknowledge me!
But here's the thing, Patrick Adon. I want you to be able to talk about some things that I think can be fun. So I did prepare a few different topics for us to talk about. And we'll see where these go. So the first one I want to talk to you, I just want to read a quote for you. It's a little bit lengthy, but it's worth it. Because I think it's a news item that many have probably missed. I think it came out today. Let me see if I can see the note. Yeah, it looks like it today. It came out. But this is a quote from Jonathan Coachman, good old coach, talking about John Cena, John Felix Anthony Cena Jr. And he was on the podcast with Kurt Angle, on the Angle podcast. So here's what he said about John Cena. Just humor me and listen. To quote Jonathan Coachman, I don't want this to come off as disrespectful, because at some point I'm going to run into Ric Flair again, and he takes this stuff very personally. At the end of the day, I could be a 17-time world champion if they so chose to give it to me. So to me, the record means nothing. The kind of person he is, the way he went about it, the way he trained every single day in the gym. We had a trip overseas. He's talking about John Cena, by the way. I know I'm talking about Ric Flair. But we had a trip overseas. It was 10 shows in 10 days. Ric Flair talked him into drinking alcohol, because that's what world champs have got to do. He literally drank every single night, closed the bar down, paid the bar tab. I asked him on day 9 how much he spent, and he said $35,000. I said, dollars? He said, no, pounds. At the time, it was 2-1, so it was $70,000 he spent on alcohol just because he's world champion. Now, don't feel sorry for him. He was making 50 to 100 grand every night in the main event. But the last night, Dean Malenko walks up to him, beer in hand, whispers something in his ear. He puts the beer down, heads straight for the elevator, says nothing to nobody, and disappears. Dean Malenko had just told him, tomorrow night, you're going 60 minutes with Shawn Michaels on Monday Night Raw. Out of respect for the effort for what he was doing, I stood at the gorilla position for him to walk back down. He walked towards me. You could smell the alcohol coming out of his pores, but he gave 60 minutes of an absolute banger. So I really don't care if he gets to 17. If it means something to him, then I do care. If it's a record or number he wants, awesome. Now he continued. I don't know if I want to read the stuff that he continued to say. But at the very end, he was asked if Cena will get the 17th reign. And he said, will they give it to him? I doubt it, because it just wouldn't make a lot of sense to me with all these other top talents that are vying for that position right now. So here's my question to you, Patrick O'Dowd. Is John Cena at this point more legendary than Ric Flair? Is his 16 bigger than Flair's 17, even though you could get up to like 22 with Flair's history? Who knows? Is there a comparison? Do they compare? Forced to choose? What do you think? Like, I was just really interested by this story and by, you know, you always hear all these stories about how hard John Cena worked at everything. And that's why he got to the level that he was at. But I just find it very interesting to you know, do the numbers really matter in the grand scheme of things?
I don't think they matter in the grand scheme of things. I think you're going to hate this answer because it's the Patrick O'Dowd cop-out answer.
It's okay.
Because I don't believe in greatest of all time. And in many, many respects. And in fact, I could count on my hand the number of athletes I've ever tabbed as what I would argue is the greatest of all time. And Muhammad Ali sits at the top of that list, and maybe Willie Mays. Those are kind of about it, because for most sports, and in this particular case as well in professional wrestling, it's very dependent on the era that you were in and the time that you were in and the expectations and the work that you did. And, you know, there's an argument to be made that Ric Flair may not have even been the greatest of all time during his era, depending on how you look at it. Now, I don't agree with that. I think that Ric Flair was every bit the superstar that Hulk Hogan is. And the thing that's been really interesting about Flair is how much his star grew after he became less active. Like, it seemed like when Flair was gone, suddenly then everybody was talking about Space Mountain and styling and profile and wooing. And I'm not saying that didn't happen while he was, you know, at his peak in the mid 80s, but you know, you see it now, like people love them some Ric Flair, and Hulk Hogan is respect, but he's not that guy. John Cena, to me, it's unquestioned that, you know, he got where he got because of who he is as a person, the work ethic that he is. Like, there's no denying that. And that idea of he worked harder than anybody else. Yeah, I believe it. And in fact, I've met someone. There's somebody who I work with at UMass who went to school with John. They both tried out for the WWE together. She has gone on to be a fitness instructor, but at the university and is a major person in that company. But she talked about it then. Like, not only did he work ridiculously hard, every bit as hard as Jonathan Coachman describes, he also remembers the people that helped get him there. Like, we've often said, John Cena was just a better person than us. And that's why he is and was, you know, the champion that he was. That's why it's such a big deal when he comes back now, because everybody gets excited when he comes back now. And yeah, I think I don't go for greatest of all time, but greatest of his era, without a doubt, without question. And, you know, you go back before his era and that weirdo, you know, Steve Austin was the greatest of his era. With The Rock, 1B. 1A, well, it's hard for me to put The Rock above Austin because Austin always got the best of him at the end of the day. And really did, you know, take the WWE someplace that it was not going without him. And then you roll back and then suddenly you're in the 80s with Hogan and Flair. And so that's a long-winded way of saying yes, and they're all kind of samesies in my book.
Awesome! I came to...
Okay.
So here's the thing, and you nailed it in one big way, and I was waiting, if you didn't say I was going to. John Cena is a 16-time world champion because of who John Cena is and because of how hard he worked, and that's the biggest thing. Like, you can win one. The Great Khali won one. You know, you can win one because of other factors, but you're not winning 16 because of other factors. Like, you're not winning 16 if you're not the guy. And some of it's also time frame and time period and TV wrestling and title changes happening more often. Like, I don't know that unless Orton does it, I just don't see somebody else getting to that 16-17 because we don't change titles like that. anymore, like really in either company, either big company. When it comes to major American televised wrestling, for me, it goes until someone else gets up there. It goes. It's not a Mount Rushmore because it's more than four, but it goes Hogan, Flair, with all due respect to Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, and The Undertaker. It goes Hogan, Flair, Austin, Rock, Cena, Roman. Like, that's who carried the business for that period of time. I can't give it to Michaels and Bret because the business took a downturn. I can't really give it to anybody else in WCW because it was Hogan, really, and Sting. Right. And maybe you can put Sting there, but I just feel like Sting's that step below in with Michaels and all
that. It was really Hogan.
It was.
As much as you want to hate the guy, and for all those folks who watched the Who Killed WCW 4-part documentary that was done by the Dark Side of the Ring guys, which, by the way, was a good watch. I watched all four episodes, enjoyed it, and I did like that it was a different perspective. It was very much a love fest for Eric Bischoff and some respect for Eric. But even they were like, you know, Hogan brought legitimacy to the brand when they were trying to find legitimacy when he was in the red and yellow. Hogan blew up WCW.
He did.
A fact, like Hogan, Hall, and Nash, you know, and Hall and Nash started something, but Hogan took it to a level that I don't know that it gets to with anybody else because of who he is and who he was. So... And it shows.
You can make the argument, and I'm not here to make that argument today, but you can make the argument that Hulk Hogan is both the greatest babyface and the greatest heel in the history of wrestling, which means he's got to be the greatest of all time. But no one wants to give him that because he's Hulk. People are more willing right now to be cool with Chris Benoit than to be cool with Hulk Hogan.
Which is bizarre to me.
When I say people, I mean the IWC, people on the internet. Not everybody, though. Just some of them. Just some of them. All right. So next one that I wanted to share with you today and discuss. And it's funny because I got to even remember what they were, even though I sent it to myself earlier today. This is a quote, believe it or not, from Billy Gunn. And I'm a closet Billy Gunn fan, more just because of how impressed I am at this 60-year-old dude who's still doing the things that he's doing. And look who he does. So he was asked... In a recent question, basically, he knows the run won't last forever, but like when will he know that it's over? And he said, I wish I knew. I don't feel too bad, but a lot of it is the way that I've taken care of myself. I mean, yeah, I do wake up and everything until I get moving. Yeah, I just found I have two stress fractures in my back, but they don't stop me from doing what I do. It doesn't hinder me. I can still do what I do at a pretty good level. I mean, I'm not going to go out there and go 20 minutes with Will Ospreay. That ain't happening. But I do still have equity in the company. Can I bring something? Damn right I can still, because the minute I step out there and these people go nuts and they start saying my name. Again, this is word for word, so if it doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense. Right. So long as I bring value and it's not, you know, if I go out there and they go, oh God, really? The first time I hear that, I'll quit. But as long as I can do something to help the acclaimed or help the company or help my kids, I will stay around. There's no reason I can't. I have no problem just being the acclaimed sidekick. I love it because I get to run around and talk to people, act like a goofball, interact when I want to, and work every now and then. And when I work, it's nothing crazy. My kids ask me, they go, did you just take a triple power bomb? Go, what are you thinking? I went, I thought it would help the match. They go, okay, don't ever do that again. And I said, okay, well, I thought in my head it did. But as long as I can do that and I feel good and it's not a struggle, the only thing that is a struggle is flying these days because I hate it. But I mean, as long as I'm still having fun and doing what I do, I can bring something to help them in, I'm good. And I thought that was pretty damn good. Like, I just read that and I was like, I get it. I totally get what Billy Gunn is saying, and I like it. And Billy Gunn, to me, is one of the things that one of the few things that I'll watch AEW and actually enjoy, just the acclaim. They're not the top act in the company, so they're not having to be taken seriously, but like, you can tell he's having fun, and it's just like we talked about with podcasting. Like, you can tell he's having fun, and so it works. And that's how I feel about Billy Gunn. I feel like he just works. And he's 60 fucking years old. He's older than The Undertaker.
Yep. It's It's interesting. He has some sort of other health condition, right, that kind of limits his time.
He had asthma, and so Bruce Pritchard has talked about it. He had asthma to the point where that's why his singles run really never worked and why he was always better as a tag team wrestler because he could tag out. And as a singles wrestler, he would just get blown up, not because he was out of shape, but because he had asthma.
Yeah, he was never in bad shape. He's on shit.
We know he's on shit because he left WWE because he popped for stuff as a trainer because he was testing for a competition. So he might still be on shit. But as you know, I don't care. Do what you want to do. I'm pro-choice in all areas of life and pro-consequence. And that's not an abortion thing. That's just literally all areas of life. So Billy Gunn is forever young for that reason. And his kids are there. Look at the whole story, the whole ride that LeBron James and Bronny and everybody took on the NBA right now with this draft. Billy Gunn's got three of his kids working with him in AEW. He's got to love that shit.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and you can really count on your hands the people of the wrestlers who have done right by their body.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to still have an opportunity to go in a ring. And the fact that Billy Gunn is in that kind of shape is a testament to him. I can only really think of another dude at his age that I would be comfortable being I could watch him wrestle again. But he would look really silly doing it because he's so damn skinny now. And that's Diamond Dallas Page. He did the DDP yoga thing. His flexibility alone would allow him to do a lot in the ring that people his age can't do anymore. And so, I've never begrudged somebody doing what they love to do so long as it's not painful to watch Billy Gunn work in the ring.
No.
And there were other dudes. Let's talk about Sting, shall we? I did not like watching Sting. And I'm happy he got this. Whatever he got out of this AEW retirement run, it seemed that he loved it and he was happy with it. And that's terrific. Great. I'm happy you're happy. I did not care to watch you on my television because it did not. I'm glad that they used you the way as best they could that you were comfortable with doing. But every time you took a stupid bump, I was like, oh, shit, Sting's going to break. Every time I watch you slowly walk around the ring because your joints aren't as good as they used to be, I was a little worried about your overall well-being. And I don't need to see that. But, when I watch Billy Gunn still move pretty well.
Right.
It's like when Ricky Steamboat came back
mm-hmm.
and did that little run with Jericho where people were like, wow, he can still,
right.
He can still move. He may not be Ricky Steamboat, WrestleMania 3, but hell, he wasn't even Ricky Steamboat Chi-Town Rumble. But
which might be the best Ricky Steamboat. Might be better than WrestleMania 3.
Yeah. But you were okay with it because you could see that he could still do it. And it's the guys who keep trying to do it who can't do it because I get it. It's in your blood, you love it, you don't want to quit. But we've talked about this before. When it hurts me to watch you, I don't like watching you.
Yeah. So, I get it.
Go Billy Gunn and DDP. Those are the two that I'm like, yep, keep going, guys. Maybe Rob Van Dam because he's so high that I just don't think he feels anything anyway. It's all dead nerves at this point.
It's funny because I was there when Darby Allin and Sting won the AEW World Tag Titles in Phoenix. And literally 20 feet from where I was sitting, Sting did his dive off the stands through tables on the floor or whatever. And we were in, and I was there near people who I know and maybe promote wrestling events with. And I was just what is this dude fucking doing? But maybe that's why Billy Gunn can still walk around all cool and Sting can't, because Billy Gunn didn't do that stuff ever. So it's Sting, but I feel like the reason why I'm okay with the stuff that Sting did was because I didn't really watch it that closely, but I did see that one, and Sting was doing what he wanted to do, right? No one was going to tell Sting what to do, and Sting's his own worst enemy. He shouldn't have lost at WrestleMania 21. Sting is still doesn't understand the level of star that Sting was. I really wish, and I know it was a possibility because I've heard people talk about it, I wish WrestleMania 6 had been Sting and not the Ultimate Warrior. I just would love to see what history would have done if that were the case, because I think Sting could have been a huge star, but who knows? You know, who knows? But I really did think that that was the case. I just saw something really hilarious, by the way. If anybody has seen Tama Tonga's shirt, his MFT, which stands for motherfucking Tongan, I believe, it looks a lot like the MJF logo that MJF has in AEW. And MJF tweeted, like, stop sending me photos of the shirt. We get it. And then WrestleTalk reported, like, MJF has reacted. MJF has reacted to Tama Tonga's MFT shirt on last night's SmackDown, which many believe, blah, 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 had a striking resemblance to the MJF logo. To which MJF tweeted and said, I just took a shit. Do you want to report that too? Like, that's why I love MJF. Like, he's on our side when it comes to wrestling news and all of that. And so I do appreciate that. The last one that I want to talk about, believe it or not, is AEW. And I don't know if it's true, but it's a report on why Will Ospreay lost to Swerve Strickland. And basically, and this doesn't have a quote, but it says, as a longtime friend of Strickland's, Ospreay wanted to get rid of the belief that Swerve's title reign was merely a placeholder until Ospreay won the belt at All In. Additionally, Ospreay wanted to set an example and be a team player, showing that nobody should feel they are above losing to the world champion. One individual within AEW noted that a point was being proven as a result. It also notes that Ospreay versus Strickland was never the plan for All In, with Ospreay having big creative plans lined up already throughout the rest of 2024. I'll be honest with you, and again, this is, you know, reported by good old Sean Ross Sapp, who's blocked more people than I even follow, including me. But I am willing to believe it because I do believe Will Ospreay loves pro wrestling. And when you see his interviews, and I do believe, you know, he's good friends with Swerve Strickland, and I could see him wanting to put Swerve over and maybe even, you know, offering it up as an option to Tony Khan. I was like, in the whole time leading into Forbidden Door, I was like, Swerve's got to win. Like, if Swerve loses, he's just another example of AEW's Flavor of the Month losing to another Flavor of the Month, but Swerve won. And Will Ospreay is the international champion. He's their version of the Intercontinental champion, or half of it, because they have a Continental Championship as well. Will Ospreay could easily main event All In and defend his inner. It's just like when Bret Hart and British Bulldog wrestled at Wembley years ago. That match went on last. Now, on the pay-per-view broadcast, it wasn't last. The Undertaker and Randy Savage was. I believe that was a match for the WWF Championship. But live for the stadium crowd, Bulldog versus Bret was the last match of the night. Live for the stadium crowd at All In, you can do Will Ospreay versus whoever for the International Championship. And everyone will buy it just fine. So I am glad, because I love Swerve Strickland, and I love that. So to me, regardless of who's reporting it, regardless of whatever, I am 100% willing to buy it.
Me too. Usually, you know, this is where we would cue the bullshit soundtrack. And no, I believe it. I believe that this makes a lot of sense. I'm not as intimately familiar with Will Ospreay. It's Swerve Strickland's relationship, and I'm not saying you are.
I'm not. Yeah,
be a little hyperbolic, but I do think that Ospreay has a good wrestling head on his shoulders and is a good wrestling mind, and I think probably did it for his buddy a little bit, but I also think that he is smart enough to see what you just argued, and that it might be a good thing for him to not waltz in and, you know, be the Ultimo Dragon and have belts on every arm, you know, just covered in gold. Like, they don't need that. He doesn't need that. He doesn't honestly need any belt to be who he is, but it's a nice little thing to put around his waist at some point.
And maybe they will. Who knows? Maybe he wins the Continental Classic. Yeah, maybe he wins a Continental Classic and go. I think he could be a good candidate for that. Just like Swerve was last year, even though he didn't win it. Eddie Kingston did. I can't criticize for not being there because he, like, broke his leg or whatever. But But yeah, I buy it. I definitely can buy into it and definitely can feel it 100%. A side note, and I don't have this one in here or whatever, but it just came to mind. The whole deal with Kayla Braxton leaving WWE and the reports behind it. I love the fact that Dave Meltzer reported that she had talks with AEW, and Kayla herself was like, I'm leaving the biggest wrestling company in the world. If I wanted to stay in wrestling, that's where I would be. But nice try or whatever. And then the next day, or like 2 days later, Meltzer's reporting how she left because she didn't like WWE's offer. And I'm just like, he's just trying to cover his tracks with new tracks. Right. Like, that's all it is.
Like, he got called out. And so you pivot to something new that is made up.
And I'm a huge, you know, closet, you know, Kayla Braxton fan. When I went to TakeOver here in Phoenix, she was the ring announcer. People can tell you I was like, there's Kayla Braxton. But at the same time, the minute she moved to L.A. and stopped hosting The Bump and moved to L.A., like, you knew this was coming. Like, she wanted to spread her wings and do other things. Look, Kathy Kelly came back. Kayla Braxton can come back someday. Who knows? But change her handle to Kayla Becker TV. Like, it's all out there. She's going to pop up somewhere soon with a job. Maybe ESPN. Maybe, well, ESPN just kind of moved a lot of operations back to New York as an NFL network. Right. Maybe UFC. Like, who knows? But when she moved to L.A.,
I think my favorite, or my guess for the next made up rumor, though, about why Kayla left will be stemming from, again, this Mercedes Moné interview where she was like, the WWE didn't want me to go work for The Mandalorian, which, I'm sorry, I'm going back on this.
You are. But, we talked about it already.
My bullshit meter goes off on that when this is a company that capitalizes on every fucking opportunity it can.
They probably just wanted to be involved and make sure she was kept safe. Here's the other thing, too. That was under a completely different regime.
Right.
Nowadays, it would be encouraged. So the company that she turned down would have let her do it. The version of the company now that she did not want to go back to would have no problem letting her do it. Here's the other thing. She ain't done shit since The Mandalorian.
Right.
Like,
and she wasn't, she was kind of back for like an episode or two.
Speaking part at all?
She has had a couple of lines here or there.
And here's the other thing. She's not great at the wrestling and the talking in the wrestling ring.
No, Greg, you don't understand.
Oh, I do.
Again, if you follow all the Stangasming, she is the greatest of her generation because she's won all these titles at these companies and does terrific promos, not wooden and stilted promos that don't sound really all that interesting at all. Like, Mercedes Moné looks great. She does. She has a good look. She is a competent worker in the ring. But she's
great with the right opponents. Great with the right opponents.
But she is we said this a few weeks ago when somebody, after she won a match, said something like she was the greatest woman. Oh, said that she was the greatest like women wrestler in the world right now.
I think Tony Khan said that.
No, well, maybe Tony Khan did say that, but this was definitely a either a reporter or a fan outside of it when I saw it. But I just remember my response to that we said on the show was, bro, she's not even the best wrestler on her own, in her own company, in her company.
When she wrestled Willow Nightingale and she won that title, she wasn't even the best wrestler in the match. So, and that's not a knock. That's just the way I saw it.
This is your boy Kenny Killer telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
All right, Patrick O'Dowd, we have a wrestling pay-per-view this weekend. I know you are so excited. It is WWE Money in the Bank weekend. I am sure that the Toronto crowd is going to be insane because... They, 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 They're Toronto. They're a smart wrestling crowd, and they're going to want to top what's been happening with these international PLEs. So right. I think the Toronto crowd's going to be insane for both SmackDown and for Money in the Bank, and hopefully for NXT Heatwave, which is taking place on Sunday as well. So we do have five matches, because it is a WWE pay-per-view, so we got five matches that are announced. I really think they could get away with six, but hey, it is what it is. And so we're going to do the usual, and I'm sure you're going to have deep thoughts on all of these and what you think is going to happen. So we will dig in. We'll start off with a six-man tag team match, Patrick O'Dowd. The undisputed WWE champion Cody Rhodes teams with Randy Orton and Kevin Owens to take on any three of the four members of the Bloodline, any three of Solo Sikoa, Tama Tonga, Tonga Loa, and Jacob Fatu. Who should win? Who will win?
For the purposes of the story they are telling, the Bloodline should win. And I think they will. God bless you, Kevin Owens. Enjoy your pin. I think the Bloodline will win. I don't think Solo will be the one that wrestles. I think it'll be the other three. That would be my guess. With Solo somehow impacting the end result.
I agree. But
I think it's got to be the Bloodline, in my opinion.
I agree with you. Orton could eat the pin very well. Orton put over. Orton ate the pin for Carmelo Hayes to advance into the Money in the Bank ladder match. It was a roll up, but still. Or Solo could be in the match and pin Cody, and that's what leads to a match between the two of them at SummerSlam. Though I'm not sold on that being the match at SummerSlam. Just because I think it should be Roman, I think it should be straight up, and Cody beats him clean. But that's just booking by Greg. I agree with you, though. I don't think Solo should be in the match. I think it should be the Tama Tonga, Tonga Loa, and Jacob Fatu. And Jacob Fatu is probably going to be the one to get the pin, because Jacob Fatu is probably going to be the one that at some point stunts Solo's growth, because Jacob Fatu is insane. And that's just me.
There was someone else I was going to ask, and I lost it. Never mind.
It's okay. We might see another person debut. Who knows? Roman could return, but I doubt it, because they did put Paul Heyman through a table. Like, Roman ain't gonna watch. Brock could come back too. Like,
I remember. If Solo really is the kind of the tribal chief that he says he's going to be, tribal chief doesn't wrestle in a six man tag when he's got three other dudes.
True. I agree with you 100%.
Sorry, 100%. That was my thought. It made more sense earlier in the conversation when we were talking about it.
No, I get it. You're exactly right, though. Sami Zayn defends the Intercontinental Championship against Bron Breakker.
This is, again, I think Bron Breakker should be the one to win this match. I think Bron Breakker will. Sami's the perfect guy to do the underdog hopey stuff until Bron kills him. And becomes the Intercontinental Champion. That's kind of how I see it. I could be wrong. We could stretch this out a little bit longer. It could go another show. But I think the freight train that has been Bron Breakker, and again, you talk about a guy that just oozes potential that the WWE seems to be building into quite the star. Bron Breakker is taking that mantle on pretty well. And I think this is a good step for him. And the Intercontinental Championship, perfectly fine place for him to be as he continues to hone his character and craft up on the main roster.
I don't think Bron Breakker is going to win. I also don't think he's going to get pinned. I think this is going to be one of those things where there's destruction outside the ring, maybe a no contest. Because in a count out, somebody loses. But if he just spears the crap at him through the barricade and then nobody can continue, and they just call this match a no contest, like, to me, it's a showcase for Braun, but if Braun does win the title right now, like, it just, he doesn't scream Intercontinental Champion to me yet, because he's not really just wrestling in legit matches. He's just fucking people up. Like, to me, I think the next step for Bron Breakker is this feud with Braun Strowman, where he's doing these crazy things to a guy as big as Braun Strowman and still coming out on top. So I don't think he loses. I don't think he eats a pin, but I don't think he leaves with the Intercontinental Championship, because I just don't think he needs it yet. I think it's too soon, and I just think that what he's doing has so much weight behind it outside of the title situation.
But if you do a no contest or a non-finish finish,
mm-hmm.
then you're taking that and you're taking that to another show.
Maybe you could. It depends on what you do on Monday. Maybe Sammy starts a feud with somebody else, and Braun starts a feud with somebody. Maybe at SummerSlam we've got Sammy Zayn and Ludwig Kaiser, and
I mean,
Ludwig screams Intercontinental Champion to me. So, or you know, there's also Bashir Berlin, which Ludwig Kaiser, you know, you would think is going to play a big role in. So, or a role in, not a big role in. But I don't know, because Berto and Angel aren't even booked on the WWE shows in Mexico. So, who the hell knows what's going on? Next up, we have Damian Priest defending the WWE World Heavyweight Championship against Seth freaking Rollins in a last chance match, or what's being called, because if Priest wins, Rollins can never challenge Priest for the title as long as Priest is champion. If Rollins wins, Damian Priest must leave the Judgment Day.
Is this where they pull the trigger on, because they've been, you know, they've been teasing it a little heavily with Finn and Damian being at odds. Is this where they do the tease and Damian loses to Seth because of the Liv Morgan Finn Balor alliance that I think would come to light? Oddly enough, I kind of hope not. I don't want this to feel like a transitional championship for Damian Priest, but it's Seth freaking Rollins. We're not, you know, we've never been LOL Seth wins. Damian Priest beating Seth Rollins, though, would be huge, 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 huge for Damian Priest and will make a big difference. So I'm sorry, I'm kind of talking this through as I evaluate this. I think the trigger gets pulled. I think the trigger gets pulled and Damian Priest loses.
I don't think the trigger gets pulled. Because here's the thing. This stipulation is really dumb for Seth Rollins because Gunther is challenging for this title at SummerSlam because he won King of the Ring. And I don't think Seth Rollins – I don't think you put Rollins – you put the belt on Rollins just for him to turn around and lose it to Gunther.
Fair.
Unless you're trying to build up the number of title reigns that Rollins has. I think Priest loses to Gunther at SummerSlam. And maybe that's where we pull the trigger. I do think there will be Judgment Day shenanigans. Liv Morgan's not on this card, but I'm sure she'll be there. I'm sure there will be shenanigans. I'm sure she'll get in. I think a lot of people are. This is going to be the match where a lot of people get involved. But I do think Priest ends up winning, despite some fuckery by the Judgment Day that doesn't go the way that they think it should, because Damian Priest doesn't want them there, and that's going to cause more like Priest being like, "Did you want me to lose? Do you want me out of the Judgment Day?" Like that's going to be the big questions, and Gunther's just going to be laughing his ass off because he knows he's going to win the title because Triple H loves him some Gunther. Next up, the women's Money in the Bank ladder match. Io Sky, Chelsea Green, Lyra Valkyria, Tiffany Stratton, Naomi, and Zoe Stark battling for the women's championship match contract. Who should win? Who will win?
Sorry, this is the most unexciting match on the card because this goes all the way back to the problem you talked about when you were talking about the women's division. And I've talked about this. None of these people are particularly exciting right now. Chelsea Green is fun and she's got her role and she's entertaining. And if she were to win the briefcase, she'd be very entertaining with the briefcase. Io Sky seems like Io Sky and Zoe Clark are like the two sort of quote unquote credible folks. Naomi's nice and she's always going to be in quote unquote in the quote unquote. I'm saying a lot. She'll always be like in the picture, but like, I don't buy her as the Money in the Bank winner. And we've talked about Lyra Valkyria a couple of times already. We got to quit trying to make fetch happen with her. Like we need more from her, which brings me to Tiff. Zoe Stark's nice. Oh, I don't see it. Which brings me to Tiffany Stratton. who 3 months ago, yay, Tiffany Stratton, let's go. And now I'm like, where's Tiffany Stratton? Like, she showed up, she's done her thing. Obviously, she won her match to get here. I think she makes the most sense to me to be the Money in the Bank ladder match winner, to be both entertaining with it and credible with it. And I hope it would get us some sort of jewel-encrusted briefcase. So I'm going to go with Tiffany Stratton, who will win. I don't know who should win.
Okay.
And that's the problem. Like, I don't know who should win. I guess because I'm picking Tiffany, I guess I feel like Tiffany should win. But I don't know who should win. But I'm going to say Tiffany Stratton.
So Io Sky just had it last year, and that's how she became women's champion. So that's hard. If they're really serious about Zoe Stark, this is the point to do it. But I just don't know. Naomi, sure, but I just, you know, she doesn't need it. Like, she could challenge at any point. She does have the dynamic with Bayley, so I could see them wanting to go with that. Lyra Valkyria, it just doesn't, especially because she's on Raw. Like, it just doesn't make, not that she would have to cash in on the Raw champion, but I just don't see how it fits. Chelsea Green would be hilarious and amazing with the contract, and but it wouldn't, I don't see Triple H going for the comedy route yet with the briefcase.
Right.
And that's what she would be. To me, it's Tiffany Stratton who should win and who will win. They're setting up this relationship between Tiffany Stratton and Nia Jax, and Nia's probably going to beat Bayley for the title at SummerSlam. Unless Tiffany Stratton cashes in during the match and steals Bayley, you know, Nia Jax's thunder and wins the title there, even if that's been done before to Nia Jax by Alexa Bliss. But, which, you know, Nia Jax would be like, damn it, it happened again. Or they could, you know, Tiffany Stratton, I think, could benefit from a longer time holding the briefcase as well. I think she could do good with it and bring her back to the forefront. And like you said, it would be a completely blinged out version of the briefcase, which could be fun, and maybe they could even sell copies of it as well and make some money with Tiffany Stratton in that way. So yeah, to me, it's Tiffany Stratton who should and who will win this briefcase. So last up, we do have the men's Money in the Bank contract match, Money in the Bank ladder match. Jey Uso, Carmelo Hayes, Andrade, Chad Gable, LA Knight, and Drew McIntyre. I've already kind of said what I think is going to happen. So
yeah, real quickly, remember when, like, Carmelo Hayes was the it guy for 5 minutes? We're like,
he's still there. It's
yeah, but, like, is he?
He's in the same spot that Tiffany Stratton is in right now, in my opinion.
Should he be?
I think so. Yeah.
I don't know.
I see it. I see what Carmelo. Remember, I religiously watch NXT, so I've seen Carmelo come up through the ranks.
You're not understanding the point I'm getting at here is that just the way the momentum train has never gotten out of the station with Carmelo.
But that's what they do with the call-ups. That's what we're doing with Carmelo. That's what we're doing with Lyra. That's what we're doing with Tiffany. It is a lot of start stop, but that's going to be Triple H's thing because the roster's already loaded. Right. That's why we drafted Dijak to Raw and never saw him on Raw. Like,
right.
Because they're loaded.
And he's not that exciting of a speaking of guys, I don't see it.
Let's not talk about I don't want to talk about Dijak.
I don't see it. Here's the thing. I think LA Knight should win. But I don't think he's going to win. Narratively, it makes too much sense, as you pointed out, for it to not be Drew McIntyre that wins this match. I know you hate it when we just agree all the time, but I kind of got to agree with you on this one. The other name that I would throw out there would be Jey Uso, but as I said earlier on the program, I feel kind of done with Jey Uso for a little bit in terms of bites at the apple. And
yeah.
So even though he could hold on to that for like a year and take his time with it, I think we need to cool Jey a little bit. Let him be where he is and let him get wins the way he's been getting wins and have him earn another title shot a little bit later.
I also think that the world title situation for the men right now is such that I don't think you need someone with a briefcase right now. You right. got Damian Priest. If Finn Balor was in this match, it would make sense with everything that's going on there. But like going with the assumption that Gunther's about to become world heavyweight champion, if that is true, and then going with the assumption that Cody is going to be tied up as WWE champion or in that scene for a while, like it just doesn't. I feel like they've got a lot of that mapped out right now. So having McIntyre get the briefcase, try to cash in same night and get stopped by CM Punk, I'm okay with quote unquote wasting this year's briefcase because I just don't think it's necessary. And I think that they have this history of cashing in that women's briefcase so quickly that literally outside of Carmella, I don't think anybody's ever held it for any, impressive amount of time. I would right. love to see Tiffany Stratton hold that briefcase until like beyond the Royal Rumble, at least. And that would, she could hold it till like Survivor Series and be the second longest briefcase holder for the women as it was. They just always cash that thing in so quickly for the women that I would love to see someone carry it for an extended period of time. And that could be Tiffany Stratton. For the men, like I'm totally fine with them blowing this briefcase quickly and getting it out of the way and letting, because LA Knight, I think falls in that should category, but Logan Paul has a lot of reasons to want to make sure he doesn't win that briefcase.
Yep.
Jey Uso, like you said, yeah, but like I don't see him successfully cashing in. Although I think there's money in Jey Uso as a world champion. I really do. Even if it's a short run, I just think that where does it fit? If you got Gunther coming in the way he is and a lot of other stuff going on, it just doesn't work for me. And I would love to see it. I just don't see where it fits. So to me, it's like, do the McIntyre thing, have Punk screw him over same night, get the men's briefcase out of the way for a year. I'm cool with it. Which means the night would probably be closed by Damian Priest and Seth Rollins, which good for them. They deserve right. that. So, that's what I think. So, but I agree with you and that's okay. It's okay for us to agree. Cause like I said, right now, WWE's kind of too predictable and cause they're hitting us over the head with things. Like, had Drew McIntyre not said, I'm winning the briefcase and cashing in that same night, it doesn't telegraph what I expect to see.
Right.
And it's just right now they're in that hit you over the head with it mode. And again, the casual fan base is the core fan base for WWE. They don't give a fuck about what I'm complaining about right now. They really right. don't. So that is what it is, so to speak. So, and that is damn near an hour and a half long podcast. I didn't feel like it was an hour and a half long podcast. Of course, I let Patrick down a rant for 24 of those minutes in the beginning. So that was highly entertaining.
Well,
you delivered. You promised the rant via text today, and you damn sure did deliver on it.
Said I was going to go full old man yells at cloud.
And you did.
And kids, I'm just going to say this. Stop making my wrestling watching so fucking miserable. I blame all of you. Kids these days.
You have the ability to not open the app.
I really don't, because that's like how half the Chairshot Radio Network communicates to each other. Like, I don't have everybody's... I'm not you. I don't have everybody's cell phone numbers.
I go into the DM thread, too. I can go into the DM thread without looking on Twitter. Again, I have an app that limits my social media use, and it's been the greatest thing ever. Because it just cuts me off after... And I get more and more aggressive with it. I think now if I hit 20 minutes during the workday, cumulative... it cuts me off for 2.5 hours, and it's just great, and I love it, and I highly recommend, highly recommend it to anybody.
Somebody with ADHD, I don't know that I can handle that,
That's why you force yourself into doing it. That's why you force it. So, it's all good though. But that will do it for this week's edition of the Greg DeMarco Show. Go follow Patrick Dowd at Wrestling Realist, where he rants or talks about sports or does whatever at WRESTLNG. REALIST. You can follow me at Greg DeMarco 44. Follow the website at Chairshot Media, for all things Chairshot.com. It is thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Thechairshot.com.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Congrats to PC Tunney for contributing 1,000 pieces of work to the Chair Shot over this 7-year period. That's insane. Such an amazing. That's why he is the king of content. That's why At this point, I'm like, yeah, do it. Like it's just insane the things that he's doing. Check out his brand new shows that he has. The sports show that I can't remember the name, and The Oddity with him and Aesop Mitchell, where they talk about crazy news of the week. It's all available for you on the Chairshot Radio Network. Congrats to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, 200 episodes. Keep it going. Every time that happens, I'm like, I really wish we started counting when we first started podcasting, because who knows what we're up to. But we just hit play. But we just hit play and went. So who knows?
Well, you know, with hiatuses, we're probably at like 220.
Oh God, we're so much farther. It's been 13 years.
It was a joke, dude. Why'd you no sell the gag?
Had we done 50 podcasts per year, that's 2 weeks off a year for 13 years, it'd be 650 podcasts.
Oh yeah,
we're north of 500.
Right. Yeah, we've done a ton of.
For all we know, you just listened to the 500th episode of the Greg DeMarco Show.
We have no concept of time. You will never get a celebration episode on the Greg DeMarco Show.
No.
And well, you know what you will? You'll get a celebration episode of when we return from like a 3 month break, if that ever happens again, or something like that.
Who knows? So maybe in November we can actually do the first ever live recording.
You know, we've made that joke,
and it just never happens.
Threat. We've threatened that multiple times.
But I feel like it's closer to happening this time than ever before. I don't know. We'll find out. We shall find out. So anyway, that's going to do it. Have fun. Watch the wrestling this weekend. Enjoy yourself. Don't take it too seriously because it's just meant to be fun. That's it.
Awesome!
I came to
acknowledge me.
Your child has so much potential. But your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 2 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.